Thank you very much. Today I'm going to present you my project about the misallocation of talent in innovation. And I'm going to open up with an example you all know. I'm going to start with the example of Albert Einstein. As you well know, Albert Einstein was a prolific theoretical physicist, and he was also an inventor who had over 50 patented inventions throughout his lifetime and over 300 scientific papers. And to the right-hand side, you can see one of his original patents. It was called the Einstein refrigerator. And he was his contributions in the fields of theoretical physics cannot be really mentioned here, that they are so great. And the question I'm going to ask today is that, how would the world look like if Einstein did not become an inventor, but became a factory worker or some other profession instead? So I'm going to ask, we have all these prolific inventors, but what backgrounds did they come from? And are we potentially missing out on potential prolific inventors because they couldn't make it into the profession? So when we look at the parental background of Albert Einstein, we see that he didn't come from just any family. His father was actually a very rich salesman and an engineer, and he even owned his own company that manufactured electrical equipment. And thanks to coming from this upper middle income background, Albert Einstein received the best education he could at his time. He went to elite schools in Germany, Italy, and Switzerland, and attended ETH Zurich as his alma mater. Suppose Einstein's parents had been from a very poor background, and suppose that he could not obtain this elite education. How would the physics and world look like if he didn't become an inventor? And the natural corollary to this question is, what is the social loss due to poor talented individuals not acquiring the education required to participate in inventive activity? So we only observe the positive outcomes. What about all the people that we are missing out on? And what would be the social impact if we could somehow let these people also become inventors and contribute to our stock of knowledge? So in this study, I'm going to first open up with an empirical section. So I'm going to provide some robust evidence on two facts. First, I discovered that people from richer families are much more likely to become inventors. However, people from more educated, not rich, educated families do not experience such an advantage. However, on the converse side, when we look at the quality as inventors, the productivity as inventors, we see the opposite pattern. We see that people from more educated families are much more likely to become prolific inventors, but coming from a richer family, conditional on becoming an inventor, does not predict your talent as an inventor, productivity as an inventor. So I'm going to focus on this discrepancy. The fact that one set of people are more likely to become inventors, but that set of people are not more likely to become the prolific inventors that we care about. And in order to look at this, I'm also going to build a theoretical model in order to look at what we can do and assess what would be the quantitative impact of doing this social change. In particular, I'm going to have a simple firm side in my model. There will be endogenous growth in this economy. Firms will hire unskilled labor for production of their goods, and they are going to hire inventors in order to make new innovations. And conditional successful innovations, the firms are going to increase their productivity, which will lead in the aggregate to TFP growth in total factor productivity growth in the economy. And this is a positive externality because innovation will help all the firms, all the people in the economy at the same time. I'm going to have a much more complicated household site focusing on who become inventors and who do not become inventors. And for this purpose, I'm going to have a heterogeneity in wealth of the families, in innate ability of the individuals that we cannot observe, and the education they receive. In this model, the parents are going to invest into the early childhood education, of their children, and they are going to leave bequests to their children. And the trick in this economy will be that people will not be able to insure themselves against idiosyncratic risk. And what I mean by this is that against the individual shocks, such as which job you end up at, or whether you get a talented child or not, you are not going to be able to insure against these, and this is where the wealth of the family will matter. In addition to that, I'm going to impose the mild restriction that people cannot borrow against the future income of their children. And in this particular setting, I'm going to have some competition for limited inventor training. So there will be a fixed amount of inventor training in the economy. You could think of this as going to very prestigious colleges, getting into a master's or PhD program, and this will be limited in supply. What the people in this economy would like to do is to become an inventor, get this high-quality education, to earn more money. But since this is scarce in supply, people will have to compete against each other, and this is where the wealth will come in. Because the chances of becoming an inventor will depend on several factors. The uncontroversial of these will be the innate ability. So if you are more talented, you are much more likely to get inventor training. If you have if you have higher quality early childhood education, you also have a higher probability of becoming an inventor. And these are all productive, and these would not create any misallocation in the economy. However, what will have a bite is that there will be also a third channel, which I'm going to call credentialing spending, which is unproductive spending that only increases your probability of getting this highly prestigious education, getting into a master's or PhD program. And this will be influenced by the wealth of your family. What this will lead to is that high-ability people from poor families will be competed out by low-ability people from rich families, just because they do not have the financial resources. And this will end, will lead to some misallocation of talent in the field of innovation. And that's what I'm going to talk about. I'm interested in what's its quantitative magnitude, and can we do any better by some sort of taxation, transfer mechanisms, etc. So I'm going to focus on two experiments. In the first one, I'm going to just shut down this credentialing spending, this distortion in the economy, and see what it leads to. And I discovered that shutting down the influence of wealth on becoming an inventor increases the social welfare in consumption equivalent terms by 6%, which is quite sizable. But this we cannot probably do in the real world. We cannot completely eliminate the effect of wealth on becoming an inventor. So I am also going to consider an alternative government policy in which people are going to be taxed. In particular, I'm going to tax the bequests parents leave to their kids progressively, take these tax proceeds, and use this to lump sum subsidies to the population and see if this can improve the growth rate and social welfare in the economy. And as a result, I'm going to find out that the welfare gain of this policy experiment will be even larger at 6.2% in consumption equivalent terms. So this study builds on a wide literature. So first, it relates to the literature on misallocation of resources. I think the closest paper in this literature will be the Shehurs, Jones, and Kleino paper on allocation of talent in the United States. They focus on many different professions, such as doctors, etc., and they also look at racial issues and gender issues in getting into these high-paid occupations. I'm just going to focus on inventors in particular, and I'm going to look at the effects of wealth in particular and try to isolate myself from the other considerations. This, of course, relates to the literature on inequality and growth. Both the more recent papers, such as Philip and Fuchs' paper on top income inequality and innovation, and Rush Chetty's paper on the inventors' life cycles. But it also relates to the older and wide literature about how inequality might affect growth. And I'm going to offer a new mechanism on how inequality can reduce growth in some cases. Of course, this model will be an endogenous growth model, where inventors, the quality of the inventors will affect the long-run prospects of the country. And it also relates somewhat to the nature versus nurture debate, because of we are interested in how much the parental wealth can distort the optimal allocation of talent, whereas perhaps innate ability can overcome it and reduce its effects somewhat. So I'm going to start with my empirical findings. I'm going to ask two particular questions in my analysis. The first one is, how does the background of a person affect the likelihood of becoming an inventor? And the second one is, how does the background of a person affect success as an inventor conditional on becoming one? And the answers to these questions will be different. To give you a broad overview of what I'm going to do, I'm going to have two sets of data separated from each other. First, I'm going to have information on the families of the inventors back from 1930, from US Census of 1930. And I'm going to get some information on income, education, and other characteristics of the people. And I'm going to look at the inventors from a much more recent sample, from 1975 to 2008. And this information comes from US Patent Office. So I'm going to look at inventors in the more recent period and connect their outcomes and probabilities of becoming an inventor to their ancestors, their grandfathers or great-grandfathers, back in 1930. And this I'm going to achieve by using their surnames as a proxy to link the two data sets. So I'm going to consider, for instance, Smiths. I'm going to look at the income and education of the Smiths on average back in 1930 and try to see if this has any predictive power on becoming an inventor today, or how prolific you are as an inventor today. And the answers will be quite distinct to these two questions. So income will turn out to be affecting the probability of becoming an inventor, as opposed to education, which might be more correlated with innate ability, to probability of becoming a prolific inventor. So the data sources I use are quite extensive, and the merged data set contains information on around 1.9 million patents, more than 1 million US inventors, around 110,000 unique surnames, which will be my unit of measurement. And this data is from 2.5 million individuals from the 1930 census in the United States. In order to answer my first question, I need to build a metric of probability of becoming an inventor at the surname level. And this is quite simple. I simply divide the number of inventors with a particular surname by the number of people with that particular surname. If this ratio is larger than one, it means that on average, this surname, people with this surname are more likely to become inventors compared to the national average. If this is less than one, then people having this surname have less of a chance of becoming inventors in the United States. So before I start my first set of regressions, I would like to mention that I'm going to standardize all my variables throughout this paper. So I'm going to subtract the mean and divide by the standard deviation of each variable. So all the coefficients I'm going to show you are the beta. So they mean, if I increase the standard deviation of, if I increase the independent variables by one standard deviation, how much of an impact as a percentage points does it have on the dependent variable? So you can all look at as percentage changes. So the first thing I do is to regress the probability of becoming an inventor on the ancestor's income. And if you look at this number, it turns out to be quite significant, both statistically and economically, at 23.9%. So if you are from a richer, if your surname was richer back in 1930, you are much more likely to become an inventor today. Just your surname tells me that. But if I look at the education, it is still significant, but the magnitude is much smaller. So if you come from a more educated family, and if I don't look at your income at all, it again means you are more likely to become an inventor, but just by 2.9%. But if I do a horse race between the two variables and look at income and education at the same time, the effect of education completely vanishes. It becomes statistically insignificant. Whereas the effect of income remains just as strong at 23.9%. So what this tells us is that just by looking at your surname, if you are from a wealthier family, I can tell directly that you have a higher chance of becoming an inventor, but I cannot say the same for people from more educated families. This by itself is not very interesting. What's interesting is that this pattern will be reversed when I look at inventor quality. So in order to look at the second aspect, I'm going to create several measures of inventor quality. What I'll measure the inventor productivity by is creating a very high number of patents, which are cited widely in the literature. This will be my main metric of inventor quality. And if you recall from the previous paper, the people like Edison, Tesla had all lots of patents, which were cited many times in the remaining time period. I'm also going to have some other patent quality metrics as robustness, and they all lead to the same conclusions. Nothing changes. So I'm going to do a very similar experiment here. I'm going to regress inventor quality as described in my measure on again the same measures, income and education. And this time when I regress inventor quality on income, it turns out to be significant at 6.6%. But this time, if I repeat the regression with just education, the education's impact is much larger at 17.6%. And if I do a horse race this time, the pattern is completely shifted. So I see that people from wealthier families, conditional on becoming inventors, are not better inventors at all. It does not predict inventor quality. But if we look at family education conditional on becoming an inventor, now we see that it predicts your quality much more. It's 17.5%. So this is quite striking. What could be the reason behind this discrepancy? I did several robustness experiments, and I can tell with certainty that most of the things you would think would be causing this pattern actually don't. So I'm not going to show you all the tables, but I looked for demographic change. So I looked at all the surnames. Some of these surnames have increased in the share of the population. For instance, for immigrants, think of an immigrant surname. This surname had much fewer individuals back in 1930 and increased its share in the population a lot at more recent times. Could this distort my findings? They turn out not to. I looked at males versus females, and the patterns were exactly preserved. I looked at rare surnames, tried to see whether this correlation pattern broke down for rare surnames as opposed to very common surnames, such as Smith. And the results are robust to these. I looked at anything you could think of at the surname level, such as household size, literacy, coming from another country. Nothing changes these facts. And here's the dilemma, here's my question.
You raised the question before, you know, that condition, if you make it in spite of, so that echoes what you were saying, the point that you were making before.
Yes, I guess one question here is, maybe this is good news, because if it's all ability, then maybe the low income or high ability can still make it. Is that your main conclusion for findings?
That is actually...
low income, but they still managed to get into innovation and we didn't lose. They basically, there's no lost Einstein.
No, right? Oh, no. That's not my finding. What I find out is that controlling for all the others, other effects, I still find that income makes you an inventor, but it does not at all predict your quality as an inventor. So it is the case that one group of people become inventors. People who are rich are much more likely to become inventors. But conditional on becoming inventors, they do not perform as well as the people from higher education families.
So I guess what I'm asking is pretty different. Two groups of inventors, there's some that are not very useful inventors, and others are the only really useful inventors, like Edison. Is one of the impressions we're finding that, in fact, we're not losing on the Edisons and Einsteins of the world because they have so high ability that they go into innovation and their ancestors were already educated and income doesn't really matter.
So there are two things. There are two things. So if an individual is extremely talented, there's a high chance he will succeed no matter what. But what I find out when we look at the whole data is that there are people who would have performed well as inventors, but they couldn't become inventors because their parents were from low-income families. So that's the thing. If they make it into the sample, if they somehow become inventors, then all the problems are solved. The problem is they cannot make it into the inventor profession. So that's the problem.
Can I make just one? Normally, for instance, if there was no misallocation, right? So if we were selecting really the most able people to the innovation job, in that case, also the extensive margin should have been predicted by the ability. In that case, you know, Murat interprets education as ability. So also in the first stage, when you look at the extensive margin, you should see that education should predict who becomes an innovator.
Exactly.
Whereas his finding is that...
The
sign completely flips and he interprets it as, at some level, extreme credit constraints.
Exactly.
Okay, I don't want to interject too much empirical fanaticism here, but in the same comment I made to John, which is, if you go back to your two-man regression analysis shown so far, your third columns, are you sure those things are probably going to be fairly collinear?
Oh, they are not.
And if they're not, you should show us. So,
yes.
I usually think that for most periods of history in countries, income and education go pretty strongly with each other. If for some reason, this is an exception, United States, 1930,
So this is an exception in my data, and I'm guessing this is because I'm not looking at individual people, but averages at the surname level. So I see some surnames that are very wealthy, but rather low on education. I see surnames that are very educated, but don't have much income. And the correlation between them is quite low, lower than 20%.
It's okay. Where do you think that comes from, since you're building up surnames from individuals?
Yes.
Where do you think, why do you think that correlation is so low? Do you think this is noise?
The reason I cannot tell for sure, but that's what happens. So I'm aggregating at the surname level. For instance, if you just think of very common surnames, such as Smith, anyone is a Smith, you would expect the correlation to be very low. There is a lot of noise because of the aggregating at the surname level, definitely. But despite all that noise, I still capture huge effects. So the predictive power of these measures are still huge. So that's quite interesting. So just to wrap up my findings, I find out that people, just looking at your surnames, if I see that your surname was more educated back in 1930 in the United States, I can predict that you will be a much better inventor, conditional on becoming one. But this set of people are not the people who the society allocate as inventors. As opposed to this, people from richer backgrounds are much more likely to become inventors, but this does not predict a higher quality of inventors. And this discrepancy is what I'll be focusing on in my model. And I'm going to try to create a structural model which can create the same correlation patterns. And the key mechanism I will have in mind will be, again, access to high-quality education. So I'm going to briefly walk you through the details of my model. In my model, the time will be discrete, and this will be an overlapping generations model. So the agents will live for three periods: child period, young adult period, and old adult period. And the preferences are extremely standard. I'm just going to have time-separable preferences with constant relative risk aversion. And one particular thing I'll have is that the parents will care about their children. They'll be altruistic, but not perfectly altruistic. So I'm going to have an altruism parameter, which determines how much they care about their kids as opposed to themselves. And they'll care more about themselves than their kids, but they'll still care about their kids, and this will provide them with motivation to invest into their education and leave them high amount of bequests so that they can have an easier time. I'm going to have a simple production site. I'm going to have a continuum of competitive firms which use unskilled labor, L sub U, and physical capital K in order to produce the final consumption good in a competitive setting. And all of these firms will have their firm-specific productivity, which I'm going to denote by Z. I'm not going to go through the algebra, but these firms are going to have positive profits that are increasing in their own productivity, and this provides the firm with the incentives to innovate. So they will want to improve their productivity in order to improve their profits. But in order to improve their productivity, they have to innovate. And in order to be successful in innovation, they are going to hire inventors. So this will be, again, a very simple formulation. The more inventors a firm hires, the more probability of invention these firms will receive. And conditional and successful invention, they are going to improve their productivity by a fixed amount that's determined in part by a parameter gamma that's fixed, and in part by the aggregate productivity level in the economy. This will introduce the positive spillovers in the economy, and this is why we want to boost innovation in this economy. So if all the firms in the economy are more productive, your innovation will improve your own productivity much more.
Just to clarify, are the inventors identical in your model?
In my model, the inventors are not identical. They all provide differing amounts of skilled labor supply, but all skilled labor supply is paid the same wage on the effective unit. Yeah. So I'm just going to skip the firm's maximization. They are going to choose the optimal amount of inventors that maximizes their profits. Now I'm going to focus on the household side, which is the important part in this model. Which is the non-standard part. I'm going to have two different types of labor, as I mentioned. The unskilled, low-skilled labor, which is used in routine production, as you recall, and high-skilled labor, which is used as, which is used in innovation. So these are the inventors. But the trick is, a person cannot become a high-skilled worker without some particular education. I'm going to call this high-quality tertiary education, which is necessary to become an inventor. And as I said, I have things like getting a master's or PhD degree from high-quality institutions like MIT, Stanford, etc. In mind. So this is not access to just college. This is access to very high-quality education, the sort of education that gets you an inventor job in the future. And the probability of receiving this education will depend on many different things. One is innate ability, which I'm going to denote by A. So if you are just more talented, you have a higher chance of becoming an inventor, as you would expect. So if you are extremely talented, like Edison, you might get to become an inventor no matter what. But there are also other factors that we have to consider. There is also the early childhood education that you receive, which increases your probability of becoming an inventor. So if you are a very high ability person, that didn't receive a good early childhood education, that might still mean that you don't get to become an inventor. On top of this, I'm going to have this unproductive credentialing spending channel. You can think of this as spending money just to get into these schools. perhaps you can pay your own tuition to get into the PhD program, or your parents spend some money on the private tutoring that improves your chances to get into these elite institutions. But I'm not going to take a particular stand on what they actually are. And I'm going to have some random noise, so some luck component in it. Mm-hmm. I know the following. I don't know about elite education, but I know that if you look at inventors versus non-inventors in the United States in 2003, inventors are three times more likely to have a PhD degree, and over two-thirds, I think, have either a master's degree, a professional degree, or a PhD. So they are much more educated than the rest of the population. That you would expect. What I cannot answer is what portion of these graduates from the very elite colleges. That I do not know.
Okay. And is that important for your model, the elite assumption?
What matters for my model is that there's a set amount, a fixed amount of inventor training in the economy, and spending money can increase your chance of getting that education. They could. I just want to differentiate from plain college education. Plain college education would not get you that. Yeah. So moving on, I'm going to talk a little bit about how innate ability and other things evolve in my model. So I'm going to have a simple autoregressive process for innate ability. So with a persistent parameter rho. So this means that if your parents were more talented, you are more likely to be talented. And I'm going to calibrate the value of this persistence. So this could be genetics, this could be cultural transmission, anything that you can think about. But I'm going to assume that there will be some persistence of innate ability within a family. I'm also going to have some investment into the early childhood education of the kid. So the parents are going to spend some physical resources in order to improve the education, early childhood education of their kids, which has a convex cost function, pretty standard. And the actual productivity of an individual, which I'm going to denote by L, will be a constant elasticity of substitution combination of both your early childhood education and your innate ability. So both of these factors are productive, but they are perhaps more productive if they are together. So both early childhood education and your actual innate ability that you were born with matter for your productivity as an individual. So now we come to the final mechanism in the model. So I'm going to build a mechanism which determines who gets this scarce inventor training and who doesn't. And in order to determine this, I'm going to have a score function with two components. The first component will be the actual productivity of a person, and the second component will be the credentialing spending done. So in a perfect world, in a perfectly meritocratic world, the only component would be the first one. The first one would determine completely who becomes an inventor. In that hypothetical world, the most talented people would become inventors, the rest would become routine production workers, and there will be no misallocation of talent. But by adding this credentialing spending, I'm going to introduce some distortion to this model. So people can invest in this credentialing spending, which improves their likelihood of becoming an inventor, but does not improve their productivity. And as a result, mediocrely talented people from very rich families will be able to become inventors, and this is individually rational for them because they are going to earn more wages when they become inventors. But by doing so, because the inventor training is limited in supply, they are going to prevent poor children who are very talented but don't have the resources from becoming inventors. And this is going to be what causes the misallocation of talent in this model. I'm going to briefly talk about the timing of choices in my model and spare you the details. Each period will start by the observation of the innate ability of the young adults. So everyone observes the innate ability of the young adults. And after this is observed, the old adults, their parents, choose how much to consume and how much bequests to leave to their kids. After the parents choose how much bequests to leave, the young adults choose how much money to spend on getting the inventor training, how much credentialing spending to do, so that they increase the likelihood of becoming an inventor for themselves. After they choose this, the scores of all the individuals are realized, and according to the realization of their scores, the job allocation takes place. Those with the higher scores become the inventors, the rest become routine production workers. And after this, after all the uncertainties result, the young adults are going to choose their own consumption, the consumption of their kids, how much to save for tomorrow when they become old, and how much to invest into the early childhood education of their kids. I'm going to skip the value functions, which just describe what I told you here in mathematical rigor. At the end of the day, I'm going to focus on a balanced growth path equilibrium. So in this equilibrium, the aggregate variables such as aggregate output in the economy, consumption, wages, etc., they'll all grow at a constant growth rate of g. But the interest rate and other distributions such as the relative savings distribution, the score distribution, all of them will be time invariant, and the markets are going to clear. So I'm going to take this model to the data and try to assess the quantitative importance of the channel I mentioned. In order to do this, I go through a calibration exercise, and I have particular data moments that I target, such as yearly real interest rate, yearly GDP growth rate, etc. What is going to be crucial in this calibration analysis will be the regressions I did in the empirical exercise. So I'm going to take my model, simulate household data using the model, and try to run exactly the same regressions I did back in the empirical section, and try to match their coefficients. So I'm going to try to match exactly the domination pattern of income in terms of becoming an inventor, and education in terms of success as an inventor. As a result of this, I get some parameter values, which I will not dwell on. I'm going to show you the results I get with this calibrated model. So the first quantitative experiment I'm going to conduct will be to shut down the credentialing channel, go to the fully meritocratic world, and see what happens in this hypothetical world. So what I'm going to do in mathematical terms will be to set the parameter that governs the strength, the effectiveness of credentialing spending in the score function to zero. Now, the most talented people will become inventors, and the rest will become production workers. In this hypothetical world, the first thing that happens, and you would expect to happen, is that the domination pattern on becoming becoming an inventor is reversed. So if you look at the second column, you see that now education predicts both your quality as an inventor and your probability of becoming an inventor. So this is what I would expect to see in my empirical exercise if we lived in a completely meritocratic world. So the same set of people would succeed as inventors and become inventors. Exactly. I can show what happens if I play with this parameter that I set to zero. You can see very clearly that playing with the influence of credentialing spending does not change the domination pattern on the success as an inventor on the right-hand side, but it completely reverses the domination pattern on the probability of becoming an inventor. Here you can see blue is education and red is income. And if you reduce the effectiveness of the credentialing spending channel, education dominates and income becomes much less significant. So what happens to the rest of the economy in this hypothetical meritocratic world? So the first thing that happens is that the yearly GDP growth rate increases from its baseline value of 2% to 2.2%, so a 10% increase on its value. And simultaneously, this is driven both by an increase in the aggregate skilled labor supply. Please go on.
So just to understand more, how much in the baseline was used on credentializing? So that's something wasted money that you don't need to...
Around 5% of the GDP.
So that comes on top of the growth?
Yes. So it will improve social welfare on top of the growth. Yes, exactly. So there is first the growth effect. There's a 10% increase in the growth. This is led to by an increase in the aggregate skilled labor supply, around 28%. But despite the fact that we move some people, despite the fact that the talented people now become inventors, even the aggregate unskilled labor supply, the productivity of the unskilled workers is increased by a little, because now those waste resources are used on early childhood education, which is actually productive. And as you can see, the education spending to GDP increases by 19%. So it shows up there. So what is this driven by? How is the aggregate skilled labor supply increased? This comes from two channels, both the selection channel and investment into these inventors. So first, I observe that the mean innate ability of skilled workers is higher by 23%. So now we take the more talented kids and make them inventors. So this is the first channel. But on top of this, the education, the early childhood education these talented people receive is also increased by 30%. And as a combined result of the two increases, the aggregate skilled labor supply is increased by 28%. And what we also observe is that in this hypothetical world, there is a much more level playing field in the sense that the average bequests of these inventors that they receive from their parents is reduced by half. So now they reduce much less bequests because they do not need to spend as much on credentialing spending channel to become inventors. Finally, this result is a bit surprising. If you look at what happens in terms of the inequality in the society, we see that the overall inequality in the society is actually increased by 6.6%. But if we look at the composition of this change in inequality, we see that inequality actually decreases for the poor. If you look at the log 50 to 10 ratio, inequality actually decreases. But if you look at the log 90 to 50 ratio, if you look at the top income inequality, it increases. And this is actually a surprising result in the sense that in a more meritocratic society, you should expect to see some increase in income inequality, not necessarily wealth inequality, but income inequality. And this is driven by picking the most talented people as the inventors, which will have a higher productivity variance. And I think this speaks to Philip and Ufuk's paper on top income inequality and innovation. Mm-hmm.
Is productivity the same as that of a low ability, uneducated worker? Or do we allow productivity differences as a function of ability
Yes.
for the uneducated?
Yes.
Okay.
So both for the skilled and unskilled workers, their productivity affects their wages, and it's heterogeneous. When we look at the average welfare in the economy, there is, of course, the positive effect from growth and positive effect from wasting less resources on credentialing spending, but there is also some negative effect from the increase in inequality, and as a combined effect of all of these taken together, the social welfare gain in the society is 5.9% in consumption economy terms, which is quite sizable. But perhaps we are not interested in this hypothetical world because it is very hard to limit parents from investing into the education of their kids and giving them a leg up in the society. What we could alternatively do is to do some resource redistribution and see to what extent this can reduce the misallocation of talent in the society. And this will be my next experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Mantis versus others, right? So there's sure. this evidence. So do you, so here which one is?
What dominates here is the productivity differences between the workers, not between the occupations, but the workers.
Yes.
Yes.
This is, like, that's the main
Exactly. So going to this new exercise, what I'm going to do is text the bequest parents leave to their kids, progressively so, and take all this tax revenue, distribute as lump sum payments to the society, and see what happens. So it will be quite progressive. I'm going to have a particular taxation function with a scale parameter and a progressive parameter, and I'm going to try to pick these while trying to maximize social welfare. And what happens is that it turns out that the optimal tax schedule in this economy is extremely progressive. So when I look at the average tax rate of the top 1%, this is bequest taxation, I see a rate of 12%. But as soon as we go down to top 5%, this falls to around 10%, and the top 10% have an average rate of 4%. So it's extremely progressive and taxes just the top people in the economy on a high average tax rate. And in this alternative economy, the yearly GDP growth rate goes up from 2% to 2.05%. So the change in the growth rate is just one quarter of what I had in the meritocratic world thought experiment. So I cannot get rid of all the inefficiency in the economy. However, what this leads to is also a reduction in the inequality in the economy. So when I look at all these inequality metrics, unlike the meritocratic world thought experiment, the wage income inequality does not change a lot. And as a result, the welfare gain here is even larger than my thought experiment at 6.2%, though admittedly this 6.2% does not come just from the growth effects, but also from the social redistribution effects. So I did some robust, I'm just going to briefly mention what I did to see what happens in alternative versions. So I did some robustness with lower intergenerational earnings persistence targets. So in my original calibration, I took a very particular view. I took the highest possible estimates of intergenerational persistence of earnings. What would happen if we were in a world where intergenerational persistence of earnings and thus innate ability were much lower? So if genetics didn't play that much a part, if it was more nurture than nature, what would happen? When I do this, the numbers change, but they do not change significantly. So the growth rate increase in my meritocratic world experiment would be 2.29% instead of 2.21%. And the welfare increase would be 6.6% instead of 5.9%. So not a huge increase. But what is important is that if you believe the persistence of innate ability is not that high, if you believe that it is nurture rather than nature, you should be pushing harder to combat the misallocation of talent, because it matters more for the economy. To conclude, in this study I came up with some new facts on how richer people were much more likely to become inventors. But people from more educated families did much better as inventors and built a theoretical model to explain this pattern. And I think the previous paper speaks to my mechanism in particular, because we saw that once you controlled for the education of the individual, the income of the father did not matter anymore. So I think there's this channel getting access to elite education is what drives this misallocation of talent in innovation. And to conclude, I believe that my results show that this is an important problem from a social welfare point of view, and we might want to combat this problem by whatever tools we can in order to not lose out on potential Einsteins. Thank you, Arjun.